This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The presidential debates, such as they were, are finally over. Last night was the last meeting between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and viewers tuned in to see if this third performance would be any different from the first two debates, while pundits couldn't wait to see if whatever happened would move the needle. Did it? Let us see what our panel of pundits thinks. We're joined by three political scientists. Dr. Scott Huffman from Winthrop University, where he is also director of the Winthrop Poll. Welcome back. Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson College. Both of them are in our studio here at Spirit Square. And with us by phone is Dr. Andrew Taylor from North Carolina State University. Welcome to all three of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let me turn your mic on. Scott, there you go. Is it safe to say, if you look at any newspaper in the country this morning, if you watched any coverage, maybe other than Fox News last night, that the big takeaway from this debate, the key moment was when, for the first time, a candidate said he may not support the winner or may not concede the election? Is that the takeaway from this?
That's the chief takeaway. And in fact, if people don't want to hear anything else, you don't need a political scientist to tell you that that was the moment in the debate. I just had the suspicion that when he was first asked at the Republican primary, would he agree to be the party's nominee and not the third party, he agreed right away. But then he pivoted away from that. Will he do another pivot here? I don't think so. I think it's this rigged phenomena, this rigged media's against me, et cetera, is going to haunt him. That is going to be the moment when people go in to cast their ballot. It's a long-term moment.
Is the media against him? He gets the preponderance of the coverage, but he's getting the preponderance of the coverage for several reasons, I think. He's more visible than she is. He's out on stump doing things more than she is. She seems to concentrate on private events, and she takes time off to prep for these debates. He's never taken any time off. He just keeps going like the Energizer Bunny. And the fact that what he says and what he chooses to focus on makes headlines. Is the media against him simply because they're covering him?
No, the media, is basically what helped him catapult himself in the primary also ran all the way up to winning the Republican primary.
So is he being disingenuous, or he simply does not understand how it works?
No, he fully understands how it works. But I think he also understands that using the media as a foil is a absolute winning strategy. Newt Gingrich did that when he was running for president in 2012. That's why he won the Republican presidential primary in South Carolina. He pivoted against the media. But to your broader point, Hillary Clinton has actually gotten really rough treatment from the media over the years. But right now that the media has elevated Donald Trump by constantly covering him, now their constant coverage is fact-checking him and showing his own words, and that's not doing him any favors. But, back to something Susan said, I don't think in the end he'll come out and ask his people to go out and light torches and grab pitchforks. What I actually think will happen is that he will ride. He will use that the system is rigged line to certainly perhaps create a Trump TV type thing for the people whose voices aren't heard, and maybe even try and create a third party. But doing that means riding that rigged train. But to do that effectively, he has to say, I'll accept these results, but we're going to do something bigly to turn the America around. So I think he can accept the results without acknowledging to his people, with a wink and a nod, their legitimacy, so he can do something else.
So, Dr. Taylor, is this constant drumbeat about how the media is unfair, particularly to conservative, Republican, right-wing candidates? You choose your descriptor there. Is that a canard, or does it really exist?
Well, it could be both. It could be there could be a core of truth to it, and it could be exaggerated. There's a lot of data about the party registration, the political attitudes of journalists that do suggest that the trade, the profession, for whatever reason, possibly because it attracts people with a certain worldview, does sort of skew to the left. There's a couple of caveats to that, though. The first is just because a majority of journalists are Democrats or a significant plurality of journalists are Democrats and liberals, does that get into their work? And that's a different kind of question. There's some research to show that's not the case. There's some research to show that it might be the case. The other thing is that in the last decade or so, 20 years, conservatives, groups on the right have done a good job in trying to counter what they consider to be that natural disadvantage and create a kind of media machine as well.
Could it not be said that their media machine is as strong or stronger than the mainstream media, which is how they refer to everybody else but Fox News and Rush Limbaugh?
Well, I think if you look at the history of the Trump campaign, he has peeled off various newspapers and news outlets from coming to his rallies or to cover his rallies. He singled out certain reporters, even Megyn Kelly from Fox. And that doesn't create a climate in which the media is predisposed to say, let's give him a fair chance. I agree with Scott in that he has used the media masterfully, and the media has not been unkind. It has reported the words of Trump. It has not. That eclipses any kind of treatment of and media scrutiny of the WikiLeaks, the Clinton Foundation. It just eclipses it.
So let's go back to the big story of the night last night, at least as many news outlets seem to view it. Chris Wallace's question, will you accept the outcome of the election? That's the question. Here's the answer.
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. If you look at your voter rolls, you will see millions of people that are registered to vote that shouldn't be registered to vote. Tell you one other thing. She shouldn't be allowed to run. She's guilty of a very, very serious crime. She should not be allowed to run. And just in that respect, I say it's rigged.
But, sir, there is a tradition in this country. In fact, one of the prides of this country is the peaceful transition of power, and that no matter how hard fought a campaign is, the loser concedes to the winner, not saying that you're necessarily going to be the loser or the winner, and that the country comes together in part for the good of the country. Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Now, I did not hear this, but commentators who were in the hall said there was an audible gasp from the audience when he said that, because this is unprecedented in American history. What should your political scientists, what should our reaction be to this prevarication, if that's the right word, this unwillingness to say, I will concede if I lose?
Well, it's questioning the legitimacy of our democratic process.
So what should be our reaction to that?
Deep concern. But let me back up.
Even if you're a Republican, even if you're a Donald Trump supporter?
Mainstream Republicans are saying they're concerned about that. But I want to go back to something Donald Trump said. I've been seeing terrible things. No, he hasn't. There is no record of mass fraud.
So why is he saying that? Because every single person I've seen on television, everything I've read in the newspapers says exactly that. There is no evidence of any kind of voter fraud anywhere in the country for hundreds of years to speak of. Where is he getting that? How is he? Why is he continuing to say?
Well, it's, media sources from, their side that are coming out with these made-up numbers all the time.
Their side includes the former person who ran Breitbart News. It's a website, a right-wing website. His last name is Banner. I can't think of his first name.
Bannon. Yeah.
Bannon, excuse me.
Steve, I think.
And he is the CEO of the Donald Trump campaign. I did not know this, but according to one commentator I saw last night, she said that in an interview previous to this campaign, that Mr. Bannon described himself as not as a conservative, but as a Leninist. And his objective is the end of the state.
I think his best description would probably be prophet provocateur. And, you know, to bring down the establishment just meshes right in with what Donald Trump's message is and, you know, and who he's attracting. So Bannon's no conservative, but Donald Trump is no conservative.
So if Dr. Taylor, if we do not hear from mainstream Republicans or any Republican, we heard from Lindsey Graham last night, he condemned this, Donald Trump's remarks. If we don't hear from Republicans on this, how should we view them?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I agree with what Scott and Susan have been saying about the nature of the statement itself. But to just sort of have to continually be trashing your own standard bearer, whatever the mistakes were made earlier on in making Trump the nominee, is a very difficult position for Republicans to be in, because it's a no-win situation. What you need to really do is to pass it, and that is to say, you know, I think these things are terrible. I really wish the nominee hadn't said them, and then try to divert the attention away from it, because If you do so, then you don't pick up really that many votes. It's not as though it's going to change Democrats to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to vote for this Republican candidate now because he's distanced himself from Donald Trump. But if you do distance yourself and condemn the nominee, you lose a number of base supporters. So it's just a really difficult position for Republican candidates to be in.
Well, I'm going to come back and talk about how serious this comment really is. How should we really take this and view it? We have to take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. Mike Collins. We're talking about last night's final presidential debate with Dr. Scott Huffman, professor of political science and director of the Winthrop Poll at Winthrop University, Dr. Andrew Taylor, professor of political science at North Carolina State University, and Dr. Susan Roberts, also professor of political science at Davidson College. Before we talk about how serious this comment on the part of Donald Trump is, I'll leave you guessing about whether or not I will concede. Before we talk about that, you wanted to follow up, Dr. Roberts, on the narrative about fraud.
I think, you know, you could voter fraud. I think when we had so many states, and the Brennan Center has been following these, looking at voting rights laws, changing voting rights laws, photo ID, early voting, that increased the narrative about fraud. At least it became a question that people were asking. It wasn't just that we were suspicious of Washington or the ballot. It ties in with the question of race and ethnicity. I think that most every election official in the country would protect their ballot, and things have changed to make it very unlikely. We're doing a podcast at or one of these MOOCs. I don't really understand what they are at Davidson. I really don't. That looks at voter access and fraud, and the cases of fraud we were talking between the show, they're very rare. I mean, maybe 31 for every over billions of votes cast. And even the Republicans have said we want to protect and defend the down ballot integrity of the vote.
Well, once again, this comment about voter fraud puts the Republicans in a very awkward position, because around the country, including here in North Carolina, the position was put out by Republicans that we need voter ID and we need this, that, and the other thing at the polls because there's rampant fraud in the country. Voter fraud in the country, and just protecting one ballot in one ballot box is incredibly important. Well, now they have to come out and say, we have to have confidence in the election system and there is very little fraud. So which is true? Which Republican do we believe?
Well, you know, Susan's point is that both sides have been questioning the integrity of the ballot. It has been in the minds of everybody when the Democrats are talking about ballot access. It's been in the minds of Republicans when they talk about this rampant fraud. The best that, if I were a spin doctor for the Republicans, what I would say was, you know, we were making steps to ensure the integrity of the ballots, but the Supreme Court just gave us a hit back in North Carolina by scaling some of those back. You can, you know, the spin doctors can really do whatever they want with the data. The problem is the lack of attention from the public, because you have on the one hand them hearing, oh, these are needed to ensure the integrity of the ballot and they passed, and on the other hand, the system is rigged. Those are what we call unconstrained opinion. If you had opinions in your head that were constrained by logic, you would realize you can't have both of those going at the same time. But we don't do that, because we're the same people that say we want more government services and lower taxes, and I see no problem with that.
Let me go back to Donald Trump's prevarication. and be on his side for a second.
Okay.
Could it be that this was a badly framed question by Chris Wallace that required a vague answer because something could happen in Donald Trump's mind, not unlike what happened between Al Gore and George Bush? And therefore, you may not concede immediately because there may be some things that have to be taken care of, like a recount or a visit to the Supreme Court. So doesn't that – maybe the way the question was framed required a vague answer.
Well, I think if you look at Bush versus Gore, that was not something going into the decision. That resulted from a close race voter. Voters were looking at mistakes in counting ballots.
But in Donald Trump's mind, the race is close.
Well, that's going to be the
kicker.
Or so he says. If the margin is very close, then he is going to really have a field day with this voter fraud. If the margin is wide, it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, for him to use that mantra.
So, Dr. Yet it was the Bush team that took it to the Supreme Court that appealed to the Supreme Court.
So, Andrew Taylor, how serious was this lack of a commitment to concede? How serious is this?
I think we've covered that. I mean, I think it's pretty serious. It does sort of cast doubt upon the fairness of the democratic system in the United States, which is a sort of pillar of our system. It means that the next president, and indeed all elected officials, probably even at state level as well, require presidential candidates to buy into it for the legitimacy of what they do after the fact. Just a little bit quickly back to what you said, Mike, about the question. He did have a chance to say that. He did have a chance to answer the way you said, which was, like, if it's really close, I might contest it in certain places, just like Al Gore did in 2000. But he didn't. I mean, he didn't say that. He basically said, I'll wait and see. So I think Chris Wallace, it wasn't Chris Wallace's question so much. Wallace did give him the opportunity to use the Gore 2000 parallel, but he didn't take it.
Well, and he brought it up. He brought up the rigged election in his stories all around the country. I think we look at Donald Trump just in a global way, and if he had 30 minutes in a debate, he would do just fine. We've talked about the first 30 minutes. He was on target. He was disciplined. Then he went to demeaning.
I looked at the clock. It was 9:31. The debate did not really begin till 3 minutes after 9 o'clock, four minutes after 9 o'clock, because they have to let the networks do their thing first, and then they have to introduce the candidates. It was 9:31. It was about 25 minutes into the debate that he started to go
demeaning.
Well, he just became Donald Trump. Yeah. He left the prompter, left the confines of what they've trained him to do, and became himself.
He was Kellyanne Conway's candidate for 25 minutes,
right?
And then he became Donald Trump.
And he didn't do it well. He was very wooden. You looked at him and you said, this is not interesting. Maybe we look for the spitfire. But that wasn't Donald Trump. But he was on message. And he said he didn't prep. He had to prep to know what the Heller decision was.
So let's start talking about some of the things that they talked about last night and get your impressions of who came across better in each of these sections. Because it was broken down into six, or Chris Wallace tried to break it down, into six 15-minute segments on various topics. The Supreme Court. Wallace asked, where do you want the – this is a very important question. Where do you want the court to take the country, and how do you view the Constitution? Hillary said, this is the central issue, what kind of country we will be, what kind of rights we will have. The Supreme Court needs to stand with people, not with corporations, not with the wealthy. And she said she was for women's rights, LGBT rights, against Citizens United. He said it's imperative that we have the right justice, and referenced the remarks Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg made against him. I'm not sure where that came from. Said that she was forced to retract. She was not forced to do so. She did it on her own. Well, we need a court, he said, that will uphold the Second Amendment, which is under siege. And he accused Clinton of targeting the Second Amendment. She went on to talk about the Second Amendment in terms of mothers protecting toddlers. Who won the point?
Well, I think it was a tough question going in. That was a question that favored Donald Trump as the first question because he got to mention the C word, the Constitution. And Hillary Clinton, I think she was the first to answer, got to talk about the things that have been a part of her arsenal about abortion, the Second Amendment, and got to talk about the rights for same-sex marriage. She got to lay it all out there, and that really reinforced where she was going. And when you were listening, going, oh, she's not – She's giving them what they think she should give them. And the Constitution, the fears of Hillary Clinton being able to support or to appoint two or three or more justices has been the fear of every Republican. So that's where I think the mainstream Republicans, the establishment Republicans were saying, all right, this is working just fine.
She also took
– I would say both won the point, and here's why.
Okay.
They both said exactly what their base wanted to hear.
Yeah.
So, you know, to say one won or one didn't means you lean towards the other candidate, because both of them said absolutely the exact thing that they want their base to hear. Donald Trump said, he didn't say this, I don't know, he knows the phrase, he's a strict interpretationist, and he is anti-abortion in absolutely every sense, and he just wants conservative justices. And Hillary Clinton appealed to her base that are willing to have marriage equality and women's issues.
But she also...
And I think Scott's right on. It's why it does demonstrate a lot about this election, that how that they are talking to base rather than trying to reach out to the middle. I mean, the real answer to that question is, I appoint justices to the Supreme Court and allow, and they get on with it. It's their job to interpret the Constitution. I don't go in with prejudicial positions on how they should judge legal cases or policy matters. But of course, as Scott said, that doesn't work to the bases. You've got to give the liberal red meat on the Clinton side. You've got to give the conservative red meat on the Trump side.
But she did seem to be reaching out to suburban women and to Republican suburban women with her comments about the Second Amendment, saying, I'm not against the Second Amendment. I'm not against gun ownership. I just want to protect young people, toddlers, because they are sometimes getting killed or killing other people because their parents aren't responsible gun owners. They don't protect the guns. And she goes to talk about Roe v. Wade, and that appeals to a certain segment of the female population, all the things that he has a deficit in.
It did nothing to get that vote for him with white suburban women. I think if you look at it, she had things to say about reasonable gun restrictions. She talked about border security. She didn't let him get away with some of these things that he wanted to do. He didn't push her to the far right on some of these questions. And I think he did talk to women in terms of family. And she also mentioned, again, the women issue. I was just waiting, and I know there's differences of opinion of people that listen. I was just waiting for lightning to strike when he said, once again, no one respects women more than I do.
You got to laugh.
It did get a laugh.
From the audience. Immigration was another topic, and Donald Trump said, we need strong borders. Immigrants are coming here illegally, bringing in drugs illegally. He mentioned that Hillary wants amnesty, and he mentioned his endorsement by ICE. Hillary said that she doesn't want to rip families apart, doesn't want a deportation force. It's an idea that is not in keeping with who we are as a nation. She wants to bring undocumented immigrants out of the shadows and get them paid fairly, because that will help for the economy. And she did say that she wanted border security. Chris Wallace asked her about her position on a hemispheric common market. I had never heard of this before. Had you?
Yeah. Let me back up. ICE, Immigration Control Enforcement, doesn't endorse anybody. It was a union that they work for. She was giving a speech in, I believe, in South America, and talking about more open markets, specifically with energy, in the same way energy crosses borders. Heck, that's how Russia makes a bunch of its money shipping oil across borders. And it is not clear when you read the full transcript that exactly what she meant. It seemed to be referring to that, but the Republicans can absolutely take and run with it the other way. Again, both sides said exactly what their base wanted to hear.
Okay.
Donald Trump's base is, wants to deport them all. I think the most fascinating part was, the Republicans have been bashing Obama about his immigration policies, but Trump admitted something that people who have actually studied it already know. Barack Obama has been a leader in deporting people. He had deported people faster than any other president up to this point, and Donald Trump actually admitted that, undermining a Republican talking point. I'm not sure that the Republicans who are supporting Trump caught that. But if you do polls, of all the people, most people favor some type of path to citizenship because they don't want undocumented immigrants living in the shadows. They don't want uncertainty. They know how much they contribute to the economy. And frankly, they will contribute even more to the economy if they're working legally. They don't like the idea of people sneaking over the border because they feel it's a threat. So the idea of a path to citizenship in the mind of many folks is, okay, well, that might cut back on people trying to sneak in. But anyways, both sides ended up talking to their base once again.
Well, I think what Clinton did, she mentioned an example of a young woman whose parents were maybe be deported. Mm-hmm. Then he went back and talked about race again. And I think that really is a contrast between whether or not he can put a face on this or he can make generalities about races and ethnicity and African Americans. He went back to a discussion that really wasn't prompted about stop and frisk and all kinds of questions. That wasn't really prompted, and he brought that in.
When it comes to the economy, they pretty much stuck to the traditional talking points that they've been using during the campaign. But then Trump brought up some serious allegations, and we only have 45 seconds here, but he brought up some serious allegations about the Clinton Foundation. She had to defend the Clinton Foundation. Do those allegations hold water, Dr. Taylor?
I think it's a really tough position for her. I think it is one that puts her on the back foot. It's a massive organization. They did raise lots of money. She and her husband and her daughter leveraged that money. It didn't line their own pockets. But what was the utility of it? You know, they argue, of course, it was purely in the public good. But the amount of money that we're talking about and the kinds of foreign governments that provided those contributions, it does leave her very open to this charge of, again, hiding stuff, not being transparent, not being fully honest with the American people.
We'll come back and talk more about that because I think it's an important point. And people, it's very complex because they both have foundations and both have allegations about their foundations. We're going to come back with our three political scientists in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about last night's third and final presidential debate with three political scientists, Dr. Andrew Taylor from North Carolina State University, Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson College, and Dr. Scott Huffman from Winthrop University. Let's go back. We were talking just before the break about the Clinton Foundation versus the Trump Foundation. And there are charges against both, and the charges against the Trump Foundation are verifiable. I mean, he did, in fact, use foundation money to buy a 6-foot portrait of himself. He did pay off a debt using foundation, a personal debt, a company debt, using foundation money. What is Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation alleged to have done?
Well, you know, one of the allegations is, oh, they've taken money from foreign governments, from foreigners. And I think, first off, we need to remember the mission of the Clinton Foundation. It's not just the Clinton Foundation. If I'm not mistaken, it's the global Clinton Foundation, and their charitable works focus around the world. So in and of itself, there's nothing wrong there, although the appearances can be problematic if you are not just an ex-president and ex-first lady, but a senator and a secretary of state. The accusations against the Clinton Foundation focus around the pay-to-play, that governments and wealthy people gave money to the Clinton Foundation in return for preferential access in the Department of State.
Hasn't that been investigated and debunked?
That has been investigated, not fully debunked, okay. Mainly in that they sometimes had people in the State Department saying, can we get this person in for a meeting? Mm-hmm. But the part that has been debunked is that there is no proof that, you know, any discussions happened or that any of them actually got in to meet. But it's the appearance of impropriety, and the Clintons have had a lifelong problem with
that. How do you explain that? These are two incredibly smart, high-achieving people. How do you explain this complete tone deafness when it comes to optics? That's a mixed metaphor, isn't it? How do you explain that?
Well, I think if you look at the foundations, and this is – people know this. if you're a donor, if we're a big donor to WFA, we're going to get more than socks.
Depends on how much you give, Susan. Come on.
But they both deflected on this. I think he went on to say some things that were like, what? He said, I've been in Little Haiti. They hate the Clinton Foundation. And so he covered a lot of it in that same sort of rhetoric. And we went to the question of what percent of the money from a charity goes to the charity. I didn't think he did a very good job. I didn't think she did a very good job. This was where he could have doubled down again. When he has the chance to repeat things like access to abortion, some other questions, he doesn't. He just goes on and gets a field. I would say, here are 10 things. You mention them no matter what is asked. And he didn't do that.
Okay. According to the LA Times, prior to the debate, during this campaign, both Donald Trump, because of his personality, and Hillary Clinton, because of what her campaign saw as the damage he was doing because of his personality, have kept the focus on Donald Trump. And in order to win last night's debate, the LA Times said that he needed to turn that focus on her. Dr. Taylor, did he do that?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think that there was a... it was important for him to be able to do that. I think, as Susan said, when we're talking about the dueling foundations question, that this is a particular one where she's weak, and it's one where Trump can gain some traction. And she fought him to a draw. She's done a good job in doing that in issues where she has been weak. I think there were a couple of times last night where she was able to sort of move attention away from weak spots for her, and Trump didn't double down, to use Susan Woods. One was the foundation question that we've been talking about, where Wallace brought up the idea of the talk, as Scott said, it was in South America, I believe, to Brazilian executives about open borders. And the other one was when Wallace brought up Bill Clinton's sexual issues. And again, she was able to pivot away from that, talk about something else, and Trump didn't go after it. He has missed some opportunities, and I think those two last night were, again, opportunities to hit her where she does seem to be weak and where even Clinton supporters, they start to get a little squeamish.
A couple of things have come in while we've been talking from listeners. Dennis emails, one candidate is vowing to undermine the democratic underpinnings of our republic. Be afraid, Americans. Be very afraid, he writes. It has stood for 240 years as the beacon of democratic republics, and now a charlatan threatens to tear it down. Be afraid, my fellow Americans. Be very afraid. Quote, I will keep you in suspense, end quote. That is not what this amazing republic deserves. Robin emails, I am a suburban mom and Hillary supporter, and I would have preferred an answer about the Supreme Court that candidates would be strong, fair interpreters of the law that is nonpartisan. Any comment on that before we move on?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what Dr. Taylor said.
What Robin is just emailing, I said that that's what I think swing voters would want to hear, but both of them threw some red meat to the base on the Constitution and Supreme Court question.
Let's talk about the polls. The debate came on the heels of what polls have been reporting, and if the polls are accurate, it's the collapse of the Trump campaign. His allegations that the election will be rigged, an accusation that has both Republicans and Democrats apoplectic, all this happened before the debate last night. Before the debate last night, more WikiLeaks emails from Hillary Clinton's campaign. And as Trump did in the last debate when he brought in some of Bill Clinton's accusers in the audience, this time I'm told he brought someone whose son had died in Benghazi, or at least that was the plan, while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Did that play a role in this debate last night? Did any of that play a big role in this debate last night?
The guests? No.
Yeah. And speaking of polls, Trump says he doesn't believe them. Should we believe them? I mean, there are some people saying that in this particular election, because it's so polarizing and because he's such a unique candidate, that people might be lying to the polls because they don't want to be seen as being a Trump supporter But they're going to vote for him.
There's no evidence of, yeah, there's no evidence of a big hidden Trump vote. And the flip side of that is all of these people who are saying, well, I will support my party's nominee who might not actually vote for Trump. The truth is most of the polls are accurate, the polls that use live callers, because the polls that
use— How do you know? You're a pollster. You conduct the Winthrop poll. How do you know?
Well, my polls have always been right so far in predicting the outcome. The place where they vary the most is on how to select likely voters. And when you are using different likely voter screens, the same data can vary up to about 4 points, but no more, really. And so the most of the polls are fairly accurate. And here's another thing. You know, we always talk about, this game-changing moment here or there, and the consultants are all about, you know what, the difference between Trump and Clinton now is about what it was in polls before the general election even started. If this were a head-to-head matchup, what would it be? The trends have not changed that much. It has wiggled around, and as people have solidified in their beliefs, the polls are picking that up. And if you look at the poll aggregators, they're all showing essentially the same thing. So go look at the poll aggregators that you've used live caller polls and expect 2 or 3 points of wiggle room depending on the likely voter screen.
Well, poll aggregator Real Clear Politics
yesterday
showed Clinton with an average lead of almost 7 points, which is comparable to that of Barack Obama over John McCain at a similar point in their contest in 2008. 538.com gives her an 87.4 to 12.6% chance of winning the vote if the election were held today, based on polls. And based on polls, she already has the electoral vote sewn up and has severely cut into Donald Trump's possibilities of turning that around. You're certain of this?
Well, if the election were held today, yes. The big questions actually become a lot of the down ticket issues.
Yes.
You know, the Senate is quite possibly going to flip. Something bigly would have to happen for the House to flip, but it's in play. I don't think it's going to flip, but it is in play. So you could end up with a situation, and this is what Republicans fear the most, with a Hillary Clinton landslide in the Electoral College, maybe even a near landslide in the popular vote, and a Senate flipping. And she's going to go in and claim, I've got a mandate if that happens, and they are worried about that.
They always claim a mandate, but this time it may be real. And I think one more thing about the polls is that we have so many of them that they can pick and choose. And when you look at Nate Silver in 538, he identified some polls as not as good as others, and one of them was Gallup. When you look and say, this is a poll that proves so-and-so, most Americans now, and we could all agree on this, have the idea of margin of error. And whether or not, and Scott could answer this, how valid that is in the outcome, but Americans are so accustomed to polls. And I think when we look back at the numbers, it's been very fluid, but I think the numbers, as Scott said, for the down ballot races are where you're going to get a real concern on the part of the Republicans. And I think after this debate, they are concerned.
Well, when you're looking at the polls, Huff Pollster has done a great thing. They will refuse to run polls unless that polling outfit is a member of the American Association of Public Opinion Research Transparency Initiative, which means they have to publicize 100% of their methodology, or they do something else that also publishes all their methodology. So you know exactly what polls are being used when they report them. And 538 does a great job of grading polls, too. And Gallup's really not doing election thing because they didn't do it that well before.
So prior to last night,
can I talk a little bit about the mandate quickly, Mike? It will be interesting to see, there's a little bit of a conversation here about a possible Clinton landslide and Democratic pickup in the Senate, a question mark over the House. It will be interesting, though, to see what a President Clinton's approval ratings are like pretty early on. My sense is we all know that these are the two most unpopular presidential candidates we've had in modern history. Even if she does get somewhere north of, let's say, 55% of the national popular vote, my suspicion is that any possible honeymoon would be pretty short. Her approval ratings probably on day one are going to be as low as any president.
Even if the Democrats regain the Senate and maybe make some inroads into the House.
Yeah, there's a difference between claiming a mandate and having a mandate. And Dr. Taylor is right. She is going to go. She may go in with a massive victory and be utterly unpopular and not have the sort of political capital mm-hmm. to be able to quickly translate anything she wants into a first.
And won't there be, Dr. Taylor, a whole segment of the population who was already incredibly angry, even angrier because this demon woman has become president?
She's a nasty one.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they'll also remember that in the Senate, even if the Republicans go into the minority, there will be a large minority, and the Senate is set up so that there are tremendous procedural devices for minorities to be able to block what the majority wants to do. So, I mean, I think, you know, this talk of and it's premature, clearly premature, but there are some hints in the polls that it might be somewhat correct. Any Clinton landslide or talk of a Democratic realignment and the agenda that's going to follow that is probably misplaced.
Matt emails, Trump answered honestly what was a loaded question referring back to the will you support the nominee or support the winner. We cannot, he says, totally discount any possibility of a super tight election. Allegations of voter impropriety and any number of other circumstances that may arise that would present a legitimate opportunity to challenge the results by answering anything other than yes to the question asked would be totally disingenuous and nothing more than political speak. Matt gets the last word. So there you have it, Matt. Thank you to Dr. Andrew Taylor, who joins us by phone from NC State University, Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson College, Dr. Scott Huffman from Winthrop University. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.